Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas keeps you informed about all the products and people in the food industry. Friends, fun, music, news, and of course, food. Now pull yourselves up to the kitchen table with our hosts, Frank Price and Kerry Ingalls.
Another Agreeing Ideas radio show. I'm Frank, and I'm actually flying as the Lone Ranger tonight. My co-host, Kerry, is unable to join us. Something came up with a big project, and she had to bail. So you're stuck listening to me for the first half and, of course, our guest on the show. And then later in the show, I will be doing the typical food news. And I've got a fill-in co-host. My daughter, Rachel, will be filling in for the co-host position on the food news section of the show. And actually, background information is Rachel does a lot of the research and provides a lot of the different news stories that we use on the show. So she's going to take a stab at being co-host. It was like, hey, Rachel, guess what? You're co-host tonight. Anyway. That's just the way it is, and the show must go on. Today we have a special guest. I've known this guy for quite some time, back in the days when I was doing my rinky-dink podcast. I met Jesse, Chef Jesse, and I think he actually was doing a podcast show with me at some point back. I was trying to find out today how far back it was, but he is now coming on the show and going to tell everybody what he's been up to, his background, and how he became the pal of the chef business. So welcome to the show, Chef Jesse.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Oh, you are the man. I mean, how long ago were you on? I was trying to find out today, and I couldn't find all the old shows, but how long ago was it when you and I were doing the podcast thing? That had to be what? 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, have to. I would say, let me see. I would say 8 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, it's been quite some time.
About 8 or 9 years, yeah. Because that had to be like, I want to say 2016 or something. Or...
Yeah, I believe you're right. It was 2016.
Yeah,
you had what?
I'm sorry.
You actually had a show. Didn't you have a show of your own there on our podcast network?
I think it never really kicked off with a show personally, but it was like a thought. I did one with you and it was great. But as things, transpire and, you move on different ideals, but it was great inspiration for me, and just to keep pushing,
Well, you are a guy who I'm telling you, I've been watching you for quite some time, and you are now big time, by the way. You don't ever give up. I mean, you're always up to something, and I want everybody to find out more about you and what you're doing. And basically, we're going to start at the very beginning. How you became a chef and what was your drive and motivation to get into the food business? So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you kind of give your life story. You actually have a book out, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It's called My Life in 40 Feasts. And
Pow.
Yep. And matter of fact, too, Pow's what?
Yeah, we'll get into that Pow. But that Pow means passion. My Pow means passion, opportunity, and work.
You know, I never knew
Dream
that.
Big. Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm pushing it. I'm trying to get people to, you know, acknowledge it, and people are it's catching on a little bit, and people are like, wow, you know, but your power, it could be your power. Your power can be perseverance, optimist, opportunity. So the POW, really, to like you said, to start how it all started was my mom. I know in my book and my most of things when I start, I always say my grandmother, and people always say, you know, where did your mom play into that? But my mom, you know, is a chef, and she didn't like to be called a chef. So, you know, so being young, I was just working with her, you know, helping her. And she really taught me everything in the kitchen and, you know, chopping, you know, her style and when I was very young. And then when I got, you know, old enough to really check out what my grandmother was doing, it was just amazing, you know, with her sweet potato pie, her biscuits. So as I got more culinary inclined, going to culinary school, getting, you know, really into food, going back and forth down south, you know, giving my grandmother, you know, before she passed years, every year I would go down, give her a big birthday party, we'd take her out. And so I really, you know, learned, you know, from just it being inspired by her, but just learned from just being in the restaurant business, being in the food service, you know, Southern is my love and passion. You know, although I cooked French for a very long time, you know, I was really confused about Southern cooking and just cooking in general. So I tell a lot of people that my background, really, I started in Italian cooking. That was my really big, big thing. I worked in Italian restaurants. And then because I felt Southern was great, but it was kind of, you know, like home cooked food. Like, you know, you come home and, you know, Sunday dinners type thing. I never imagined to this day now you have a modern right. Southern, you know, that's on a table in a restaurant where you can go with white tablecloths and, you know, have Southern food. So it was just, it evolved and it's amazing. But back in those days, it was just like, you know, nobody was doing any fusion. Nobody wasn't heard of, you know, certain things like that. So they were mom and pop Southern restaurants, but Italian was my thing. And then I moved on to French. And I remember getting a newspaper, and it said, New York Times said, the Southern food is the hardest ever on the plate. And so I was like, wow. You know, so I always had that unhealthy imaginative in my mind about how my grandmother and them cooked. So for a long time, I had this narrative in my head that it was unhealthy. And I wasn't ashamed of it, but I just felt like, you know, we can't present this food and killing people. Although we love it, it's killing people, right? And and then I go to the French restaurant and I realize, wait a minute, you know, I'm cooking, you know, duck confit and straight duck fat. You know, I'm using 2 pounds of butter to make a beurre mate. So I'm trying to figure out, like, so what's the difference? So that's when I started to play with a modern approach. And in anything that we do and eat, we got to eat it in moderation. Although we love certain things, we just can't have it all the time. So that's when I started right. to take a look at Southern, from cooking in French restaurants, from cooking in Italian restaurants, cooking in Spanish places, you know, cooking really international, not traveling to the places, but working with chefs that specialize in international cooking and that travel. And then teaching me their style, and then I ended up, you know, just getting an understanding. And with Southern, I wanted to give you, I know sometimes Southerners eat a lot of food. I know my family do. You know, they got bulks of food on the plate. So I figured Southern, I'm making it a little lighter, and I'm, you know, just get your portions in control. You know, 4 ounces of this, 5 ounces maybe, roughly a 6 ounce piece of meat, protein. So that's what, you know, I was trying to cut down on the sugar to try to put my little spin on a modern approach. So from starting with my grandmother from back in the day to how they cooked, what I do now is interpretation of what if the old days had ingredients like we have today? How would the food be? So that's what I'm playing around with, and it's fun. You know, it's like, okay, they had only can get like chicken bouillon cubes, so to speak. They wasn't making fresh stock. So now we can make bone stocks. You don't have to. You can eliminate a lot of stuff, put in some good stuff, and like I said, they use what they had. So, you know, I don't knock that anymore. It was even going all the way back to what I'm into now is more like, you know, like back in the slave times of cooking. that's what I'm into now. Like, how do they manage? Like, how do they cook? And that's been interesting. So, you know what I mean? So implementing things like that, you know, from Southern, but that foundation of my grandmother, my aunt, and cooking and cooking with what they had, is just helping me, you know, go for my modern approach, you know, of survival, you know, because now we have so many options to eat, but we may have to get back to just eating what we can afford and what we can grow.
Yeah, it's been an interesting last 18 months to 2 years, and I think people are spending a lot more time at home cooking and learning the old ways of doing things. I can remember, and I bet you it's the same way for you, your mother and your grandmother. Did they always have a bowl of bacon grease sitting on the stove?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I told, you know, I had a little class one time. We were all talking, and, you know, one girl was like, yuck. And it was like, no, it's not so much yuck. But if you notice the bacon grease, you know, it had that little strainer in it. So when you pour the grease in there, you know, all those particles and stuff, they're in that little strainer. So you're getting straight fat in there. So it's not that, you know, that's just not that, you know, you're sautéing and you got that, you know, after you finish sautéing, you got all that stuff and you're pouring that in. Not that, you know, we talking about straining that in that little strainer there. And you know, once it, you know, seals back up, you know, you got some good old eating there, you know, and they put that on the area and the grits and the rice and the, you know, you sear with that, you know, so it's really good. And you know what? That's coming back. I actually saw an article on that. And that's coming back with, you know, the just having that little can sitting on the stove.
Well, I still do that. Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody makes fun of me, but I'm a big bacon guy, and I keep bacon grease, and I cook it in a lot of different things. And I got it from my grandmother, and it was just the way – they had lard, too. I said it last week on our show. I'm not that great of a cook. I've had to learn how to cook. When you're a single guy, you better learn how to cook or you're not going to be eating. But I've learned that bacon will make everything better. So I always hide. I use bacon for two reasons. I like it, and I also know it hides the messed up flavors that I did underneath. But no, bacon, like I call it, it's like the duct tape of cooking. So New Jersey. You're in New Jersey now, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm in Montclair, New Jersey right now.
And now, did you grow up north, or did you grow up in the south?
No, I grew up here. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, actually. Yep, I always say I have the heart of New Jersey and the soul of the south, you know. you know, that's always – I'm a Jersey guy, and I love it. You know, we have great things here for as best farmers, you know, known for the Jersey tomatoes, the corn, you know, watermelon, you know, it's good, you know. So, you know, the Garden State does hopefully get a little play on that. So, you know, being in the south and then coming up here. I'm sorry.
You know, it's funny you said that about the Garden State, because a lot of people, I mean, I've been in the food packaging business for too long, almost 40 years. And I used to travel up in New Jersey, up in the Vineland area and up that way. And people don't realize how much produce comes out of New Jersey. I think when they think of New Jersey, they think of, you know, cities, and they think of the Newark Airport and those kind of things. But there's a ton of produce that comes out of New Jersey.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, shipped out and traveled. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right about that. And I learned that as you know, I've been in this business 38 years, and I was always, you know, just amazed, like, wow, you know, going up to South Jersey and just seeing some farms and what they push out, and, you know, going to the farmer's market and things like that. And it's just like, wow, the Jersey, you know, rocks when it comes to that, you know, obviously within season. You know, you got to get them when they're ready, and you get them. Sometimes, you know, it could be a little offbeat, but that's any produce, you know.
Well, I have to ask you a question. It's more of a personal question, but if you're like me, when you cook, you like to eat. But I've noticed, maybe over the last 18 months or so, you've gotten lean and mean. So what's your secret?
Oh, man. You know what? I did put on now before pandemic. I was actually proud of myself. I mean, I got down to like I was down like 242, and that was the smallest I've been in a while. And I was looking great, and I was at the gym, and everything was great. And I thought I was doing the right thing, and then bang, the pandemic hit, And I got isolated and got a little depressed. And so Grey Goose, you know, when I post on my page, the goose is loose. My Grey Goose cocktails, and I started baking my cakes and my sweet potato cheesecakes and fried chicken. And we just started, me and my wife and family, we just have a good old time with me cooking and playing around with the recipes. So, you know, to ask your question, now I'm back, you know, getting back on my diet, you know, walking. I'm like 273. So I lost a few pounds. I'm trying to get down. But, you know, as a chef, it's so tough because, you know, like you say, you don't like to cook, but you do cook. And I'm quite sure you're nibbling and tasting. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's, that's my big thing. I may not sit down and eat. I may once in a while really at home sit down and eat a big, big meal. But for the most time, I'm picking. I'm eating. I'm out. I'm tasting this and that. I love to support restaurants, especially with pandemic. I like to just, you know, just support them, pop in and say hi. So I'm always nibbling there and here, especially when I'm cooking. So, but what I did was with my diet, people ask me that all the time, like, oh, you should have wrote a diet book. But you know what? It's mental. I tell people that. I really do. It's a mental thing. You do, if you're overweight, because that's what you want to be overweight. You know, you got your own mind. I mean, I had some clients back in the day that pay a lot of money for therapists to come in, trainers to come in, because they need that self-motivating, that they need somebody to tell them, you know, self-motivate them, to make them do it, you know, but that's the only way they do it. But I don't need that. I'm more like my mom. I'm self-motivated. I can motivate myself and inspire myself, and I can do, like, if I'm eating a big cheeseburger and a donut, that's what I want to do. You know what I mean? But if my mind says, you know what, you can't do that, then I know, at least I know I got the willpower and I can restrain myself. And that's a good thing. And that's how I lost my weight. I just said, you know what, I cut back on, you know, eating my rice and my potatoes, the things that I love, and walking. So I just said no. And it worked out for me, you know.
No, you're right. It's all in your head. It's, no matter what it is you're trying to do, whether it be exercise more, eat less, whatever it is, smoking, whatever, for the most part, you got to have it in your head first. And that's kind of like that, like that pal you were talking about. You got to have that that drive. And if you don't, guess what? Then you're going to be doing the things that you continue to do unless you make that decision.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
You know, and I learned that, you know, from my mom. Now, my mom, unfortunately, has dementia now. And, you know, it's really taken a toll on me mentally because, you know, she raised me just such a strong woman. But, you know, everything that she told me is just helping me. Only if she could really knew, you know, I know she's in there somewhere. But if she knew how she raised me and what she taught me is helping me so much. And she always used to tell me, I used to always say, Mommy, you know, I need somebody to help me. She said, if you can't help yourself first, how can you expect somebody else to help you if you can't help yourself? If you can help yourself, then you can tell somebody how they can help you because now you know. But if you don't know how to help yourself, how can you expect somebody else to come in and help you? So I try to self-motivate myself. But don't get me wrong, though. I did do, let me be a team player and reach out to other people to help me. And sometimes that can be a disaster because now I'm reaching out to other people. And then after a while, they're going to tell you, hey, big boy, put your big boy pants on and you got to fly solo on your own. And you hear that, you rude awakening, and then you get hurt. So why not self-motivate yourself? So this way, if you disappoint, you're just disappointing yourself, you know? So I fall, I get back up, I keep pushing, I learn from it. And we've been friends for a long time, and, you know, I'm quite sure you've been juggling, revolving, you roll a solo tonight, you just get in gear and roll solo. You know, that's when you get to our age, it's like, it's what we do. It's a fire? Okay, let me get the fire extinguisher, let me get the water, let me put it out, let me keep moving. You know what I mean? Some people are like, oh my God, it's a fire, you know? I'm just like, oh, fire? Okay. Put it out.
Well,
got it, baking soda milk. You know, just problem solving.
I mean, it's so true. I mean, last week, I don't know if you heard our show last week, but Carrie was on, and then she was dealing with forest fires out where she is, and they were evacuating. And so literally she had to cancel the show, get off the show, and you just, I guess you bob and weave, and you know, you got A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you choose the next letter and go. And then tonight, literally with like an hour and a half before the show, she had to cancel out. But you know what? You just don't let it get you down. You just got to keep driving right. forward and do what you yep. do. And, you know, it's either do that or get in the corner and, you know, rock in the corner and getting the ball and rock in the corner. So I like the other option. Just keep on going. So let me ask you a little bit more about this. Let me ask you a little bit more about your book. It's called POW, okay. My Life in 40 Feasts, a cookbook
yes.
and memoir by beloved American chef Jesse Jones. So if someone wants to get this book, what are they going to find? What kind of recipes are they going to find? I assume it's got recipes. It's a cookbook, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, definitely. And yeah, it has – you know what? When me and my friend and partner, Linda Eckhart, set forth out to write it. I had already had the recipes down, and I wrote all the writings in there, like, because it's a book designed through all our 12 months. And I had this premonition, like, oh, okay. I used to work for a food service called Aramark, and we every month had to do whatever the holiday was that month. We did a thing. So if it was Cinco de Mayo, we did tacos. If it was Black History Month, you know, we did Southern, and if it was Bastille Day, we did French. And I was so inspired of doing that when I worked in food service, and everybody always loved me when I did that. So I said, hey, why not I just put out a seasonal book? These are recipes that you can do per month. Things are seasonal when things are seasonal, because some people try to cook and things are not in season and it just doesn't work out. So the recipes are in season. So if you're doing the peach cobbler, that's in May. The peaches would be ready, and you can make a good cobbler. And then I wanted to tell my story of being a chef of color, being an African-American chef in this business for a long time, and not to, have people look at it and go, oh, this is a woe is me, a cry story, but just for how things revolved in my life of growing up in this industry as a chef of color. And then when we had Black Lives Matter and we had things, was it always with me was always about just being a team player, but just wanted to get a seat at the table. I'm not trying to, right. Be on top of everybody. I just want to be a part of the movement. And, you know, it never happened. So I wrote about it and people are responding to it and they're understanding that no matter what color you are, if you can cook, you can cook. You know what I mean? So I tell a little bit about that. I talk about the Black Hand, and then also highlight some great African-American chefs that paved the way for me and other chefs like Edna Lewis and Patrick Clark. And, you know, I got a Martin Luther King quote in there. And then, but the whole book really is involved around my family. It's my family recipes that I made for them that they love. Like from my wife, she loved lamb, so I got the lamb burger. My son Filet, they call him Filet now, Jesse, he loves, you know, the ossobuco. My son Tristan loves the fried chicken and waffles. My mother's in there, her pig feet. So it's my Aunt Bull, you know, my grandmother, you know, everybody's in there. My dog Zeus that passed. So I thought it would really pick up and would love for it to be like a bestseller, but unfortunately it didn't hit that. But I feel like I got my story out there. I feel like maybe after this pandemic, I could still get back on my tour and meet people and talk about it, because when people that have read it and they reached out, they're like, hey, I can relate to this book. I can relate to your story. And, I've always been a team player. But Frank also trained, and like I said, I talk about in the book, also trained under some great chefs. The young generation now don't even have the experience, obviously, like I have, but they don't have the type of chefs nowadays like I had that would just grab you by the headlock and say, get in here, let me show you this. Now, today, it's just a little bit more competitive, a little bit more, secret. People don't want to, you can't really right. trail in restaurants now because of insurance issues and if you slip and fall. So it's not like back in the day where you can knock on the back door and they pull you in and do you a bag of potatoes and you peel. And, in a couple of weeks, they ask you, do you want a job? And you're like, yeah, then you're in. So those days are over, So the book is just explaining that. And it's through recipes. They're very easy recipes. I thought of intense recipes because people think of Chef Jesse, they got to be intense. But I said, you know what? I want to make these recipes where people can do with their family and they can do themselves. So they're very easy. very simple, but they very it's very good too. Like I even got my fried chicken in there. That's my go-to fried chicken.
Okay, now I don't interrupt you. Now, okay, my grandmother and mother, everybody except me, can make some good fried chicken. I never can make fried chicken. So I'm putting you kind of on the spot, but is there a simple way, and I say simple, a tried and true way of doing it to make good fried chicken?
Well, you know what? I think it can be, but I know it, like when people say that, it's like you have to really, first of all, do it a lot. You have to make it a lot, and you have to love fried chicken. I try all types of fried chicken in the area that, you know, you got a lot of fried chicken places here, and I try them, and I go, wow, this is good. So I think, like my grandmother, her fried chicken, it's like, might be simple, but it's just, I think the way she comes to that cast iron skillet, her own personal seasoning, the way she fried, the sound, the way it floats in the oil, you know, how she, you know, imagined it to be. So if you have your own recipe, I think that's great. But I think it's just repetitiously, why am I good? Why am I good at what I do? I've been doing it for so long, over and over. I could do it with my eyes closed, you know what I mean? So if you're just going to fried chicken for the first time, it might not work out. But if you keep doing it, Frank, keep doing it, keep trying and trying error, you're going to get a good fried chicken. I notice most people that come and try to do something, they're not really passionate about it, and they don't really want to do it. So if you really, really want to do it, you're going to know your first couple of attempts are not going to be successful because you don't really know. But once you get that, once you finish cooking it and you take a bite, you go, wow, this is awful. You got to say to yourself, okay, how can I make this? So then you start going online, you start reading. Some people brine, some people use buttermilk. Some people got a special dredge and they rub. Some things are simple, you know, how you fry. So there's different techniques. Me personally, I brine and buttermilk because that's my style, but I have little nooks and crannies and other little secrets that pumps it up if I'm in a competition with my chicken. But also, it's how you cook the chicken, pulling it out at the right time, letting it rest and being crispy and hot, not overcooking it. So it's a science to it, and you really got to do. You got to love it. You know, if you're going up there, you're just like, okay, yeah, your mother, your grandmother, and everybody in your family, they love the fried chicken. They probably love the chicken. So when you love it, you taste it. When you bite into it, you say, wow, this person. When you bite my chicken, you go, he got to love chicken. You know what I mean? He got to love fried chicken because this is absolutely good. And
this is how we plug your book. So if somebody wants to learn how to cook good fried chicken, is that recipe in that book?
Oh, absolutely. The recipe is
in the
book.
Oh, there you go.
My recipe is in my cookbook, and people have been using the recipe and been reaching out to me and said, your recipe is absolutely phenomenal. They were shocked that it was so good. And like I said, you can add your own little things in there, too, to make it happen. But I gave them a straightforward, simple how I do it, flavor to the bone, because you got to understand, people get a misunderstanding about brining. You know, you're not just – it's not too much salt. Some people do oversalt, but the salt that I have in my recipe on the brine is the type of salt that's going to get down in that chicken, not salt your chicken, but flavor it. And this way, so it can be moist. So you don't have to worry about seasoning it at the end or salt, this and that. You got the flavor in it from the brine. Then once you take it out of the brine and you put it in the buttermilk, now the buttermilk is tenderizing it. So once the buttermilk tenderizes it, now you're good. Now you got, when you bite into it, you got flavor. The buttermilk's tenderizing it, so you're getting some tenderness. And then you go in there with your crust, and right in that flour, you're putting a little bit of cornstarch just to get a little crispiness. And once you fry it up, now you got that crispy, you got that moisture when you bite, and you got that flavor, and you got some pow there, brother.
Now, what we're going to say, if people want to buy your book and they want to find out these recipes, they can find – I think I saw it today. It's on Amazon, right?
Yes, it's on Amazon, and if you go to my website, because you get my website a little bit of little play too, you can click on that. I'm also in another book called the 101 Black Chefs, and that's an amazing book with I got a feature in there. I shared a recipe, but was intrigued to find there was another 100 black chefs that's just doing all types of cooking, Southern, but not Southern, so cooking French. And then my book is there. You click on books on my website and you go order from Amazon. I am trying to work on where when you click on my book that you can just personally get one from me autographed. I'm working on that.
Oh, cool.
Wait, so Amazon, I mean, Amazon, you know, you can get it from Amazon. I can't beat Amazon when it comes to shipping. I'm sorry. They're fast. yeah, I mean, I can't beat them. So I tried. You can get it in 2 days.
You know, what? I don't think I mentioned. What is your website address?
Okay, it's www.chefjessejoles.com. And it gives people a good perspective about me, you know, what I've been doing a little bit, you know, some of the places, the TV appearances and news that I appeared on. And it's really been helping with people, especially around the world, few that reach out, you know, just say, oh, okay, who's this guy? You know, because, you know, Frank, I've been doing this a long time, but yet I don't really feel like I'm the who's who of calling like an Emerald or Wolfgang Puck, you know, a Ming Tsai. But, you know, back in the day when they was getting their ranks and coming up, I was in there too. But now it's different. I learned that you just got to keep going. You just got to keep pushing. And it's going to happen. You just can't give up. Dream big and never give up.
What I'm going to do, Jesse, is I got to take a break and we'll come back and chat some more. And we'll talk about some of the new things you're doing and direction you're going, maybe any new projects you have. And I got to take a brief break here for a couple of minutes. So everybody hang tight. We're going to come back and talk to Chef Jesse and find out what he's going to be doing in the future. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more of Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Karen. We'll be right back. And now, back to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie.
And we're back, and actually it's Grillion Ideas Radio with Frank and Chef Pow, Chef Jesse Jones, and Carrie's not with us tonight. And by the way, that song was by a group called Coyote Kings, and they were a past guest years ago on my podcast, and I'm trying to get them lined up to come on the show, and I've always liked their music. So, Chef Jesse.
Wow,
where are you,
man,
going from here? What are you doing now, and where are you going?
Well, you know what I'm doing now, first I want to say, while I was on intermission there, and you know what, I remember back when I got on your show a couple of years, man, the music, man, I was jamming, boy, you know? And I said, wow, remember, you always had great music, you know? So that was awesome, man. It really was. Get ready, because it hyped me up, you know? It hyped me up. I'm like, I'm hyped now, you know, ready to get in the kitchen to cook. Get ready, because here I come. Anyway, I know you got to do your show. What I'm doing now since the pandemic, while I was sitting here, I was saying, okay, what can I do? You know, can't go out anywhere. So I'm working on now. Obviously, I want to get back on my tour, because that was my main objective was the tour of the book. I went to New Orleans. I had an amazing time. I was invited to sell my book and do a cooking demonstration at the Soul Food Museum of New Orleans, which was amazing. I felt like I arrived at that point, like as a chef, because down there, some very big-time headliners like Marcus Sampson and Carla Hall and a lot of other African-American chefs have been in this museum, not only featured, but did demos as well. So I said, wait a minute, I felt like I made it. So that was my main objective, was to travel, you know, the next stop where I was trying to get to Montreal. And so I want to get back to that, you know, hopefully when things, you know, calm down, and I want to get back to my travel. So that's one thing. Second, I, you know, want to get my barbecue sauce and my hot sauce out now. It's kind of time. I have a sauce that I named after her called My Mommy Millie's Barbecue Sauce. And it's a very heavy vinegar base with what she loved. With a little bit of my emphasis on there, and everybody loved it. I made it at an event before the pandemic really got crazy, and everybody was like, this is awesome. Like, I actually won, too. I won for my ribs. I won a year's supply of Calvert cheese, which is amazing. If you want some cheese, let me know. I'll send you some. They send me so much cheese. And so, but they love the sauce, so I want to work on that, and I want to work on my hot sauce. And get back to my kid with kids, you know, doing just being mentors to kids in culinary, not so much kids, but teens, kids too, but mostly teens, preferably of Spanish and minority base, you know, Spanish, but anybody really, because I like to give back to where I'm from when I have the father growing up. So I'm back to my mentoring. I get calls from students all the time, especially with the pandemic. They had to do their culinary programs virtually, so it was a challenge, and they did well. So I told them, hey, this is life right there. If you can do this virtually, you can do it in real life and future and everything. So that's the third thing that I'm doing, mentoring. In between, just taking a break to smell the roses, to travel the world and meet new people. I think God has given me this destiny to meet new people, because I've been courting the same people. And it's not wrong with courting the same people. But it seems like I'm not growing with the same people. Like, you know what I can do. You know I'm passionate. You know, nothing's happening here. So it seemed like I went to New Orleans and met one lady and got so much done from this one lady that took me a lifetime. And with her, it was like 1, 2, 3. And she just made things happen. And it made me realize that, oh, this is my destiny, to meet new culinary people, new culinary enthusiasts, people like yourself, to meet hopefully one day in person. We've been talking online for years, just meeting people that are interested in what I'm doing and me, you know, instead of me the way chasing other people. So then that's the other thing. And, you know, like I said, and just I want to see Italy. I want to see, you know, Paris. I want to go to a lot of these places where chef that I train with that's from and told me great stories. I really want to see it for myself. You know, I want to hit South Carolina and, you know, taste it, how they do their shrimp and grits. You know, now is the time. You only get one life, and it's my time to just, it's my time. I feel it. When I walk in the door, people are like, I feel your energy. And I'm like, yeah, I got my grandmother, Frank. I got my cousins. I got all my family that passed on. I got them inside, and people feel it. And I'm blessed, and I'm thankful. You know, I had a rough life and a rough journey, but I'm also thankful, you know.
Well, it's just like this radio show. I mean, you knew me and know me for quite some time on Facebook, and I'm kind of a goof on Facebook and started the podcast 10 years ago. And more or less, it was kind of just a way I was going to promote my barbecue sauce 10 years ago. And I thought, oh, I'll start a radio show and I'll get free advertising. Well, I did. I ended up doing that show for 10 years, and we actually took a hiatus for about a year and a half. And I just pretty much said, well, I'm done. And then out of the blue, it's kind of like what you said, the lady you met in New Orleans. Well, the lady in Memphis contacted me and said, hey, we're starting up this whole network. We'd like you to come on and do your show. And it came out of left field. So you never know who your contacts are going to be and how things – it's like the puzzles, pieces of the puzzle start coming together, and there's no way you can predict it. And you just got to follow the lead and find out, you know, wherever it takes you, that's where you go.
Amen.
What does it stand for again?
Pow. That's a big pow for you. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Same things happen to me, and it's great, and it's organic, and it's just like, wow. You know, it's just like, you know, they just speak in your language. You're like, really? You know, you're like, you don't say yes. yes, you know, and it's amazing, you know. I no longer have to sell myself like I used to. I used to have to sell myself. But now it's people call, they already know. Like, oh, I read up on you. My friend told me, oh, we had your food. And, you know, this is like, oh, great. You know, we got your book. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you know, they were like, now all we need to just, you know, where we send your ticket and we want you here. I'm like, great. You know what I'm saying? I'll be there, you know.
You're like a TV star. There for a while, you were like, it was one after the other, like everywhere. I was watching you on Instagram and on Facebook, and I thought, man, this guy's like from one TV show to the next. It was like you were like that everybody wanted.
Yeah, I'm ready for my show. I'm ready for my Chef Jesse Live. I'm telling you, I'm ready to have you on, and I'm interviewing you and cooking. I'm ready. I've been studying like Ming Tsai, Julia Childs, you know, Sarah Moulton, looking at Yang Kang Cook. I looked at, you know, Food Gourmet. I studied every cooking show when I was young, and even as I got older, I looked at cooking shows. And then I end up having my own style, my own fun while I'm singing. Are you ready for Chef Jesse? I got chicken, waffles, biscuits, and gravy on the new Chef Jesse show. Special guest, Frank, you know, coming through with his barbecue sauce, and we grilling up. So I'm ready, Frank. I'm ready. You're ready.
You know, actually, no, I mean, I can't talk about it right now because it's secret squirrel stuff, but I mentioned to you before all this crazy COVID stuff happened, I've got a project that you and I are going to need to work on, and I think it's right up your alley. I've got the idea, you know, brilliant ideas. I got the ideas. I just don't have the talent when it comes to cooking it. So that's something you and I will talk about later off air.
Okay.
But you never know. I mean, I've got this. Yeah. Like I said, this radio show came about, and now I think I can pursue some of my ideas. And you just got to follow and go with it. I do have a question. I don't know. I didn't ask you if it was okay to talk about this beforehand, but how's your son doing in his basketball career?
Oh, amazing. I mean, his basketball career is skyrocketing. He got signed to an agent. They trying to pitch him in Chile or Argentina so he can play. He got his own brand. You know, we talked about this a while back when he was just, you know, starting, and God is good. He's doing great. And, yeah, so I'm still interested in seeing what his journey, big things are happening for him, especially in his basketball. He got a pro contract in Canada. He played for a little while. They released him. But, hey, you know, he got up there. He did his thing. And he's a pro now. So, you know, once they stamp you, they can't take it away from you. You know what I'm saying? So he's a professional basketball player. He's in my book. He's in there. And it has pursuing to be a professional athlete. And that's what he is now. So I'm blessed, Frank. I told you before, I'm blessed because everything that I talked about, God, it came to reality. But we're still humble, great people. So we are good caregivers for this, what God blessing us with. We're not rude. We're not disrespectful. I give back. I help. I feed the needy. I give clothes, food. So I hold it as a grail of this blessing that God's given me and Jesse and my family. You know, so I think I'm worthy of that. And Jesse is too. He's an unbelievable young man. You know, he has educated. He has a bachelor's degree. He's the ultimate role model for young kids. Tell him, hey, stay in school. You know what I mean?
Right. No, congratulations. I was watching that as it was going on, and he was waiting to find out if he was by a team. And it's been an interesting story to watch on Instagram, and you know, just the background of what he's doing. So if you want to leave anything with people that are listening, what, any kind of message you want to leave with them? Of course, we're going to tell them to make sure they go to your website and buy your books and do all that. But is there any messages you want to leave to people as a motivation to follow their dreams?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Folks out there in radio land, look, whatever you got, keep pushing. Dream big. You know, people are always going to deter you from what you want to do. They're always going to tell you that you can't do it. You have to believe in yourself first. I believe in myself. You have to believe in yourself. Like I said, dream big, never give up. There's this one little thing that a chef told me that if you don't feel deep down inside that you have a good product, you personally for yourself, then it might be tough for you. Because sometimes, you know, you can get to a point where, you know, some people think they got a great product and they really don't. And then when people tell them, it hurts their feelings and they shut down. But if you really feel truly deep down with you, without nobody telling you that you have a great product, keep pushing and keep doing it. Keep pushing, keep doing it. Dream big and never give up, you know, because that's the main thing.
Hope. Amen. Amen to all that.
All right.
Don't ever give up on your dream, because when you do, guess
that's
what?
Right.
It ain't going to happen. So the website,
no,
again, it won't happen unless you push it. www. Is it Chef Jesse?
Yes.
Is it Jones.com? Is that right? Okay.
It's www.chefjessejones.com. Sorry.
That's all right. And everybody go check out the website and buy his book. And I guess you're still working on the autograph book deal, but go check out his website. You say on your website, you give kind of an update of where your appearances are going to be and what you're doing and your calendar, et cetera, right?
Yes, yeah, on the website. Now, what happens now is I put it on my Facebook page, obviously, and then, you know, but on my Facebook, on my website, it will going to be a blog that I'm working on with a friend, and that blog's going to have my journey, my travels, and where I just came from North Carolina with my mom, so hopefully in a few months I'll have the restaurants that I visit down there, the food, things like that. So you'll be able to. And I'm going to tell people from my Facebook page, you know, come on over to the website. I got, you know, my travels here where I just got back from. So that's how that's going to work. Seems like my Facebook page works better than my Instagram. So I put things. So look for my Facebook posts, which I post, what Facebook lets folks, a little bit that they let them see. And then I'll direct them to the website when my blog get up. But feel free to go to the website and check it out. Look at the pictures, you know, look at a little bit about me, you know, my appearances and just what I do for the community. And also, Frank, if I can give myself a shameless plug, I got PAL shirts. Passion Opportunity t-shirts. You know, if you like them, let me know. I get one in the mail to you. You know, so it, through my website, there's a contact to put them information in. So all you people out there in radio land, one PAL shirt. I know you don't know what it means. It's passion, opportunity, and work. But once you put it on, you're going to get superpowers. No, I'm just kidding. But you're going to feel good about that PAL. So,
yes. You are definitely the PAL chef. And I didn't know you had t-shirts. So everybody check out his website, go to his Facebook page, and find out more about Chef Jesse Jones. And by the way, just remember, if you go buy his book, you can find the recipe for the best fried chicken in the world, right,
yep.
Jesse?
Without I'm serious, without a doubt. And you're going to find, you can put your own little spin on it, but it's going to be perfect. You're going to wow your friends. I'm a cookbook collector, and I've bought a lot of cookbooks, and I did a lot of recipes, and they didn't come out. They didn't come out great. And I'm like, what did I do wrong? I follow the recipe. In my book, I promise you, on these recipes, when you cook, when you do my recipes, you are going to love them because they're my recipes. Especially, I have an Instapot pulled pork. I don't like Instapot, but I realize a lot of people use the Instapot. So it's a great recipe for pork in the Instapot. Put it in. It's no brainer. Everybody that used it called me back and just they reach out and say, hey, great, great recipe. I added a little bit of more of my famous sauce, but it was great, and that's good. You want to make it your own, but I'm giving people a great base to something wonderful, and then they can also, the next time they do it, they can put their own spin on it. But at least you got a base of what things should taste like, you know. And do it with your kids, too. It's a great, fun, you know, fun book for the young children, too, that they can, you know, get in there, chop, you know, follow the recipes. Great rice, great ice cream recipes. Really, I feel like I'm a master ice cream maker. I really am. I work with some great chefs that did ice cream. I won a couple of competitions for my ice cream, so I have my maple syrup, my maple ice cream in there. Yeah, so yeah, play around with the maple ice cream. Make that with this homemade sweet potato waffles, and you got the peach cobbler and the homemade maple ice cream. Okay. Frank, they'll buckle your kneecaps. I don't know if you saw that slogan.
Well, I got another question. Have you ever made, because I have homemade, have you ever made bacon ice cream?
Oh, absolutely. I love it. I made it. I love it. It's so good. And I even candied, you candy the bacon, you know?
Right.
You know, you got to put a little bit of candy bacon on, a little finisher.
Well, man, everybody check out his website, check out his book, and it'd be a great Christmas present. You know, Christmas is only, 4 months away now? So it's time to start thinking that route. And Chef Jesse, it was a pleasure having you on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
you taking the time, and we'll stay in touch with some of my crazy, brilliant ideas I want to talk to you about. But everybody, like I said, check everything out. You can find him on Facebook. And I guess, Jesse, last thing you got to do, you got to give us a big pow before we leave.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I got to give you that pow, and I also got to give you, are you ready for Chef Jesse? Pow, passion, opportunity, and work. And I'll tell you, if someone reach out on my website and they can tell me what pow means, what I said pow meant, I'll send you a shirt. You put your address in there, your size. All right?
There you go. All right, everybody. There's your challenge. Go check it out. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. We'll be right back in a few minutes, and we'll be doing food news, and we'll be back. I guess I got a couple of songs to go, and we'll be back here in about 5 minutes.
Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at brilliantideasradio.com.
Don't worry, we can make it all right. Keep on driving in the pale moonlight. troubles come and we will be long gone, flying down the road just singing this song. Times get hard, times get tough, good times come, just not enough. When they do, let's get out of town, ain't no use in just hanging around. Mama, don't worry, we can make it alright. Keep on driving, here's a pale moonlight. Troubles come and we will be long gone, flying down the road just singing this song. Mama, don't worry, we can make it alright. Keep on driving, here's a pale moonlight. Troubles come and we will be long gone, flying down the road just singing this song.
So she eats everything she sees. I'm not worried about her feeling right, as long as she leaves something for me. She likes spicy, she likes sweet, all she do is eat, eat, eat. She makes any old lucky dog feel like a girl's best friend. She eats off the low part of the hog, right on up to the high end. She likes greens, she likes meat, all she do is eat, eat, eat. She's not exactly overweight, but neither is she underfed. You wanna make the girl feel good, give her a double helping of a hot bread pudding. Give the girl some good seafood if you wanna make her feel real nice. A bowl of gumbo puts her in the mood, if you would follow it with shrimp and rice. A toupee with crawfish meat, all she do is eat, eat, eat. Hot bread pudding. Give the girl some good sweet food if you want to make her feel real nice. A bowl of gumbo puts her in the mood if you follow it with shrimp and rice. A toupee with crawfish meat, all she do is eat, eat, eat. Drinks her coffee extra sweet, all she do is eat, eat, eat.
And now, back to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie.
And we are back, and thanks again to our guest, Chef Jesse Jones. Check out his website, check out Facebook, go get his book, and find the best fried chicken in town. Our next part of the show, as we always do, our food news. And before I go to that part, I just want to remind everybody, if you ever want to hear the replays of any of our shows, each week we post that week's show, and you can go back and look at the history on www.grillingideasradio.com/replays, and you can hear all the other shows we've had in the past, all the guests, and we post that usually by Saturday evening or Sunday. Also, there's a blog there, so any of the food news that we do each week, if you want to find out more, I usually post those when I get around to it because I'm slow. But usually you'll see the previous shows, food news stories, on the blog by Sunday. So you can check that out also at grillingideasradio.com/blog. And, of course, grillingideasradio.com, you can go there and see it all. So now, as everyone knows who's been listening to the show since the beginning, I was flying solo on this show because Carrie had, at the last minute, had something come up, an emergency on a project, and she couldn't be on the show. So what do you do when you are in a situation where you don't have a co-host and you need a co-host? Well, you contact your daughter, and that's what I did. And Rachel, my daughter, is joining us on the show. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Dad.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Nothing like calling me in at the last minute.
Yep, and by the way, folks, you know, it's hard to believe I have a beautiful daughter named Rachel. If you look at me on Facebook and you see my face on the website, you think this guy actually has a good-looking daughter. Yeah, well, I've always said she got my humor and she got her mother's looks. But anyway, Rachel actually is responsible for a lot of the food news that we actually have on the show. She's always sending me interesting stories to talk about. So thank you for that, first of all, Rachel.
Of course. Yeah, I always have my eye out for interesting food stuff.
Well, you do have, you always have the cool stories. Mine are kind of boring. Mine are always like, you know, talking about how bad the economy is and how bad things are in the industry. And then you always send me these crazy stories that are like uplifting or funny. So thank you for that. So Rachel is filling in as co-host for the food news section. And if you guys listened to our show last week, we had beekeepers on from Eastern Shore Bees. That was probably one of my favorite interviews I've had. I learned so much about bees. I never knew there were so much things about bees. And then Rachel said, "Dad, here, I got something else for you can talk about when it comes to the bees." And I don't know if anybody out there knows this, but we talked about on the show last week the poor little bees, how hard they have to work just to make like a quarter teaspoon of honey. Well, she found this information online, and it says 16 ounces of honey requires 1,152 bees to travel 112,000 miles and visit 4.5 million flowers. So when you're eating honey, think of those poor little bees and how many bees it takes and how far they have to fly. So Rachel, where did you find that information?
So we actually went to the county fair, and they had all these bee demonstrations set up and then little sign set up with fun facts, and that fact just blew my mind because, honestly, I was like, wow, they travel a lot.
I know, and 4.5 million flowers. I didn't think there was – I mean, where in the heck do they find 4.5 million flowers? I mean, is it – I guess they're everywhere, but if you're going to fly 112,000 miles, I guess you'll find 4.5 million flowers.
Right, likely. It was really neat. They had, I don't know what the bee container is called, but all the little honeybees were going crazy in there. And then all of a sudden, one of the beekeepers was standing there and he said, look, here's the queen bee. You can tell because she has a white spot. And sure enough, we saw the queen bee. It was pretty neat.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for that little tidbit. By the way, I did receive some honey from Willoughby Farms or Willoughby Honey, and I had never had raw honey. Rachel, have you ever had raw honey?
I have. I usually take it when I have a sore throat.
Oh, there you go. Well, I don't think I've ever had raw honey, and they kept telling me on the show last week that raw honey is so much better than what you buy at the store. You know me, I always go to Walmart and buy that one that's in that little bear, that little plastic bear, the honey bear.
Right.
But I got this honey, and it is amazing. And they say if you take a teaspoon of it every day, it's supposed to be really good for you. So I have to admit, I don't think I've ever had raw honey. I've had processed honey, but this is the best stuff I've ever eaten. So thank you to Willoughby Bees Bee Farm for the honey. So now we've talked enough about bees. We're going to talk about more food news. Are you ready, Rachel?
Ready as I'll ever be, I think.
By the way, I don't know where you get your sarcasm from. I think it's probably from me, but all right.
I definitely get my humor from you.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I guess your mother is sarcastic too, but that's another story. All right, so moving along here. First story up. Have you been out to eat at any restaurants lately, Rachel?
We have not due to COVID, but we have picked up some food.
Well, prices are going way, way up. Quick service restaurants have taken the largest price hike of all segments, according to new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Menu prices are making the biggest monthly jump since 1981, which is the year that I graduated from college. That tells you how far long ago that was, and you weren't even around.
Yeah, that was before I was born.
Per Restaurant Business Magazine, restaurants continue to raise prices at levels not seen in decades as operators face mounting pressures from labor, commodities, and more. Restaurant menu prices rose 0.8% on a month-to-month basis in July. That's the largest monthly increase since February 1981. Food away from home prices jumped 4.6% for the 12-month period that ended in July, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, with full service prices increasing 4.3% during that time and limited service dining climbing 6.6%. Also, grocery prices during the period rose 2.6%, and that was driven largely by a 5.9% increase in the prices of meat, poultry, fish, and eggs. So we've been talking about it for weeks. I know it seems to be a boring story, but I don't think it's going to get any better. I'm in the supply business, and Rachel, I assume you've seen your food prices go up, things you buy from home.
I have, but you know what? Sometimes when you go out to eat, like the price increase, honestly, it's worth it if I don't have to cook.
That's true. So, yeah, that's probably worth a lot more than 5.9%, right?
Right.
It says Noodles & Company bumped their prices 3% this week on top of a 2.5% price hike early in the year. Chipotle Mexican Grill recently instituted a 4% price increase, and Shake Shack earlier this month said it intends to increase its menu prices by 3 to 3.5% by the end of the year, which is about a point higher than what their typical price boost estimates had been. So I don't think it's going to get any cheaper to eat. Now, like Rachel says, it's like that. What's it worth to you? At what point does it get too expensive? I don't think we're there yet. Do you, Rachel? I think you'd be willing to pay a little bit more instead of cooking, right?
Right, because sometimes when it's 5 o'clock and I haven't decided what I'm going to make for dinner, it's like, oh, I'm going to order out because that's a lot easier.
True. There's that convenience factor. It says here that restaurants are navigating a number of factors that are forcing them to raise prices. Even as many chains recover from the pandemic, they are grappling with widespread inflation in labor, food costs, construction materials, and real estate. So, yeah, same story, just a different week, getting worse and worse. Next.
So I read over this. I read over the story before I got on, and I was just curious. Right. Have you ever even been to a Noodles & Company? I thought, I don't even think Dad has probably been to a Noodles & Company.
No, I haven't. I don't get out much. You know that. But no, I don't think I've ever been to a Noodles & Company. I've been to Chipotle once or twice. And I talk about that on earlier shows where I think I went with your Uncle Tim to Chipotle in Arkansas and ordered a burrito. And I think it cost me like $8 or $9. I didn't realize that they like charge you by the pound or whatever they did. It was an expensive burrito.
Well, now it's going to be 4% more expensive.
Well, have you ever been to Shake Shack?
I have. I have been to Shake Shack in London, actually.
Oh, woo, 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 woo to you.
You know, it's funny. I've been here in America too, but we had never been to one, and we saw one in London, and we were like, we could go for a burger. We were standing in line. Like, there were tons of people waiting in line. I think it had just, like, recently opened there. And something we remember, the line attendant to tell us to go into the restaurant, she was like, oh, my gosh, I love your accent, you know, as she's, like, speaking in her English, like, British accent. And we're like, no, we like your accent. What are you talking about?
Cheerio. I didn't know. I didn't actually. So that was, you said Noodles & Company or Shake Shack? That was Shake Shack.
Shake Shack, yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask a stupid question since I've never been. I assume Noodles & Company sells noodles, right?
But, yeah. Next time you come visit, we'll take you to Noodles & Company. They have, like, macaroni and cheese, but they have, like, pad thai, Asian noodles. They have, like, penne, different pasta. Yeah, so it's all different kinds of noodles.
I'll have to check that out. And of course, they're high in carbohydrates, and I'm fat enough as it is. Okay, moving along to the next story. My favorite topics. You know I talk about this every week, Rachel. Talking about plant-based proteins. Well, according to shipments of plant-based proteins to U.S. pizza operators, it has jumped 56% in the second quarter in 2021, according to the national, MPD? I'm not sure what that stands for, MPD group. Additionally, broadline shipments of cauliflower dough and crust increased by 46% in the quarter ending in June compared to the same quarter last year. So have you eaten, I haven't asked you this before, have you eaten any of this plant-based fake stuff?
I mean, I've made a cauliflower dough pizza at home before.
And you liked it?
It was decent. Like, I mean, you can definitely tell a difference, but that's all right.
Yeah, last week we talked about on the show that I think it was Domino's. Domino's is coming out with, or was it Pizza Hut? And I forget. One of the two are coming out with the plant-based pepperoni. They've already got plant-based sausages. Now they're talking about plant-based pepperonis. So for those folks who are non-meat eaters and vegetarians and whatever, you're going to have some more fake coming to a pizza parlor at you, near you. All right. Now, according to Bloomberg, speak on this about the same topic, plant-based foods could see fivefold growth by the year 2030, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. Sales of plant-based meat and dairy items reached $29.4 billion last year, and that number could rise to $162 billion by 2030. So I guess somebody's eating it, Rachel. Not me, but somebody is.
Yeah, not me either, but it's interesting because, like I mentioned, we went to the county fair and they were having all these bee demonstrations. And another fact that I saw, it was talking about, like, you know, the importance of bees with the grass and the plants, because if you're killing off bees, they're not getting the grass that is then feeding the cows. So basically there will be less cows in the world. So maybe that's why they think by 2030 we're going to need more plant-based foods, because there won't be beef.
Yeah, but I guess even the plants that they use for some of this plant-based foods needs the bees too. So at some point, you know, they use legumes and they use, I guess mushrooms don't need the bees, but they use mold and stuff like that. Not mold, but what do they call it? But they like mushrooms and stuff to make these things.
Fungi?
But you're right. I mean, yeah, fungi. That was the word I'm trying to think. Thank you. Fungi, fungus. There's a fungus among us somewhere. But yeah, I mean, you're right. If there's no bees and it's going to affect our plants and flowers, et cetera, and grass and what have you, then yeah, I guess there won't be anything to feed the cows. So That is good logic. Maybe that's what will happen. I don't know. The lady said last week on our show that bees make up, I think she said, 2/3 of the produce section that you see in the supermarket. If it wasn't for bees, you would 2/3 of the products that are in the supermarket. So bees are very important. We better keep – I'm going to get me some bee boxes, because I don't want the cows to disappear. Even though I can't eat red meat, I do eat pork and all that. I don't want those animals to disappear, so I'm going to get me some bees. how many ideas have I had over the years, Rachel, where I'm going to do something?
I think I've lost count. I don't have enough fingers and toes.
Okay, moving along. You're so right. Moving along. This was interesting. Speaking of farming and things like that, this surprised me, and it's your age group. More young Americans are joining the agriculture sector, according to the USDA statistics. Only 8% of farm producers were under the age of 35 in the year 2017, compared with 34% at 65. However, between 2012 and 2017, the number of producers under age 35 grew 11%, reported the Wall Street Journal. So, sounds like your age group is getting into farming. Are you starting to farm, Rachel? You and Jason?
You know, we planted tomatoes in our backyard. That's as far as we've gotten, but I did see yesterday a cow that was born an hour prior to me getting there, and that was pretty crazy, but it did not make me think, man, I really want to own a farm.
it didn't convert you, huh?
It did not, no. Uh-huh. But our tomatoes have been good.
Well, that's good. Well, at least you got a green thumb. Your father doesn't. He kills everything he plants. That's a whole other story. Only thing I've got that survived was my peppers. Everything else died. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I'm giving up. Okay, moving along. Oysters. Do you like oysters? I don't think you do, right?
I've never had one.
You've never had an oyster?
No, you know why? Because it looks like snot to me.
It does look like snot. I thought you had like an oyster fritter one time when we went to a fair. You've never had oysters?
I never had oysters.
Well, Connecticut is a big oyster area, and I didn't realize till reading the story that the oyster industry is thriving again in Connecticut. And it almost disappeared 25 years ago. government efforts to clean up the Long Island Sound and develop oyster resistance to parasitic diseases called MSX have helped to boost the market to about $15 million annually. So you folks up there in Connecticut and all, I guess you can have plenty of oysters now. Here in the Chesapeake Bay, oyster business has been struggling, and they're trying to do the same thing to get the oyster beds going. They're actually giving them moratorium areas where they actually farm the oysters, and it is making a change because oysters keep the water clean. That's their main function, and less oysters you have, the more dirty your water. So congratulations to Connecticut. They've actually got a booming oyster industry now. I can't believe you haven't had oysters, not even fried oysters.
Nope, I can't say I have.
I'll have to get some oysters next time you visit. You at least have to try one so you can say it. I at least tried it. All right.
Yeah, actually, Jason's never had one either, but he wants to try one.
Oh, okay. Well, Jason, I just introduced him to cigars, so I guess I got to introduce him to oysters too now, right?
Right.
All right. Moving along, we actually talked about this story a few weeks ago, and back then the issue was that Lake Mead, which is a big reservoir in Nevada, which blocks off the Colorado River, it was at its lowest point in history. Well, it's gotten worse. The first time since it was built in the 1930s, the U.S. government formally has declared a water shortage at Lake Mead, the country's largest reservoir. The declaration sets in motion, and this just happened just, I think, yesterday or sometime this week. The declaration set in motion a series of water allocation cuts to downstream states along the Colorado River. Lake Mead is at record low levels, having dropped below 40% of its capacity, and this is all due to the drought and the heat and what have you, but the bad part about it is I was reading more about the article. It's like all the farmers who use the water from the Colorado River for irrigation, especially like in Arizona and California, they're going to be cut off. They're the first ones on the list that gets cut off. I mean, the water that people drink and use at home is one of the last things to get cut off. One of the earliest things will be the farmers' irrigation. So it's going to affect all of our produce. There's going to be limited produce coming from out west. Of course, what does that mean? Supply and demand. Prices are going to go up, and you're going to find shortages of some things, especially some of the areas that grow. I mean, that's where a lot of our produce comes, is from California and Arizona. So I'm always spreading good news, but that's what's happening. It just happened, and they're going to be making allocation cuts downstream. Okay. Now, this is something I didn't know. Wendy's. Wendy's has announced plans to open 700 quote-unquote dark kitchens across the U.S., U.K., and Canada. These dark kitchens, all they do is deliver. So they're going to have Wendy's locations all over U.S., U.K., and Canada that you don't go inside, you don't go to a drive-through. They're strictly going to be called what they call dark kitchens, strictly for their delivery-only products. Have you seen that yet, Rachel, anywhere where you live?
No, I've never heard of it, but I think this is like the future.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, it makes sense. Why spend the money for a restaurant, and why worry about a drive-through if most people are ordering and having it delivered? So they're just bypassing all that other stuff and just say, okay, we're going to make our Wendy's, and you can't come here. We'll just bring it to you. So, weird time
right, but
you live
in. I want to know if they can get me my Frosty and fries before my Frosty melts.
That's a good question. Yeah, you heard about the guy that was like 2 weeks ago, the story that he got his pizza and then went 117 miles an hour to get home so his pizza would stay warm. He got pulled over by the police. So you're going to need to have some fast
food. Yeah, I sent that one to you.
So you send me all the good stories. So I guess somebody's going to have to drive fast to get to your house with that frosty and fries.
Right, because you dip your fries in your frosty, right?
I learned it from you. Of course I do.
Okay, good.
I wonder how many other people out there do that. That is the best, dipping your fries in your frosty.
I haven't done
that in a long time.
It actually was just featured in a country song, so I think a lot of people do it.
I didn't realize that. Well, you were one of the first, I think. You should have patented the idea. Okay.
Right.
Moving along, Taco Bell. Now they're doing the opposite, which is kind of funny. So you got Wendy's not having drive-throughs, not having restaurants. Taco Bell is doing the opposite. They're soon going to unveil a prototype with 4 drive-through lanes. Taco Bell franchisee Border Foods is building a new restaurant that the chain said will be faster way to get food. A 2-story Taco Bell that's heavily technologically set up, so there's going to be less people there too, but it's going to be in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. So they're going to have a 2-story drive-thru so that instead of waiting in line, you're going to have 4 drive-thru windows. That's kind of a smart move because how many times have you had to sit in line and wait and wait and wait? So they're going to speed up the drive-thru part of their business. Makes sense.
Taco Bell's not my favorite. So.
Well, you know, it's not mine either. I mean, some people love it. It's not my favorite either, but if you like it, you'll be able to get your drive-thru faster now if this works. All right.
Sure.
DoorDash held talks over the past 2 months to buy Instacart for a price of between $40 and $50 billion. This is very interesting to me. The information reported on Wednesday, citing people familiar with the situation, Instacart had also separately initiated talks with Uber about a sales partnership for Uber Eats. So what's happening is all these companies now that are competitors in the food delivery business, they're all trying to work out a deal together. So they're going to become one big giant food delivery company. The deal hasn't happened yet, and they're still in talks. And it says the talks fell apart in recent weeks. But it's possible that all these delivery services are all going to gang up into one biggie. It makes sense, though, because if they don't do it, guess who's going to do it? Amazon will probably do it. So it makes sense that they may join forces. I find that interesting. A lot of people say, who cares? But I think that's an interesting story. All right. IHOP. When's the last time you've been into an IHOP, Rachel?
A long time.
Same here. Well, IHOP, this might change your mind. It's not going to change my mind, but IHOP is testing alcoholic offerings at 3 restaurants in California and New Mexico. It's called Bubbles, Wine, and Brews, which complements the brand's lunch and dinner menu and will expand the additional market in coming months. So would you go to IHOP now that they're going to be offering alcohol beverages?
I may, if this happened, because, you know, really nothing says pancakes like a glass of wine.
True. Is it white wine or red wine that you pair with your pancakes?
I feel like I would go white wine, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be a white wine time because it's kind of like bread, and I guess white wine and bread. But then you throw the syrup in there. That who know? I don't know. That, maybe a beer. I think beer sounds better with that. Beer and pancakes. Oh well. Look for Bubbles, Wine, and Brews at the IHOP near you. I've told the story before on the show. A few weeks ago, I think the last time I ate at IHOP probably was with you, and you were little, and I ordered the IHOP pancake breakfast that had, it was like apple pie, and it had apples piled on there, and cinnamon, all kinds of stuff on there. I have never been so sick in my life. I don't think I've been there since. It's a stack of like five pancakes and all this apple goo and cinnamon, what have you. But and it, oh, it had whipped cream on top too. I remember that. So I don't think I'll be going to Bubbles Wine and Brews. Moving along.
Well, when they have those special apple pie or whatever sort of things on the menu, they don't actually anticipate people ordering them. So, you know, that's why you got sick, because they're like, oh, actually somebody ordered that. Wow, they're brave.
Oh, so it's actually just a come on. No one actually really orders that except me. Okay. Well, I would never order it again. I know that. All right, moving along. China-U.S. container shipping rates have hit a new record high as of Wednesday. Based on figures from the Global Container Freight Index, for the first time ever, the number surpassed $20,000 for a container to ship from China to the U.S. August 2nd, the highest price was $16,000. Now it's bumped to $20,000. And so, Rachel, why am I reading this story and tell everybody about it? Because what does that mean, Rachel? That means the cost of shipping goes up, which means what?
Supply and demand.
Yeah, back to that old, remember Economics 101? Yep, prices are going to keep going up and up and up and up and up. And there's a shortage of containers shipping product back and forth the U.S. and China, and that's driving the prices sky high. That's boring stuff. Let's move along. All right, let's see. I'm going to skip the next one because I don't like that story. Let's see. Let's go to the next one here. Oh, Amazon has now eclipsed Walmart to become the world's largest retail seller outside of China. It's a milestone in the shift from brick-and-mortar stores to online shopping. It has changed the way people are buying from Teddy Grahams to teddy bears. Amazon's got Walmart beat. So I always say it's USA, United States of Amazon. They're taking over everything. Now, Walmart actually has an online service now, too, and they're actually doing very well. But Amazon's beating them. Do you buy a lot of stuff online, Rachel?
Oh, my gosh. Your grandson constantly goes to check our stoop because – he knows that that's where we get stuff delivered.
So he's always looking for the UPS and FedEx man?
Well, no, we have the Amazon truck. He'll like yell out and say, the Amazon truck's here.
Oh, wow, that's right. You live in a big city, so you've got the Amazon truck. I have to depend still on UPS and the mail service and FedEx. So he knows what the Amazon truck looks like.
Oh yeah, it looks like the adult version of an ice cream truck. That's exactly what it looks like.
Well, you know, soon they're going to have the ones that don't have any drivers and the robots that deliver it and the drones that drop it off at your house. So he's got a whole lot of exciting things to look for.
Right. I mean, constantly it's like, oh, we need this. Oh, get it on Amazon. It'll be here tomorrow or in two days.
I'm the same way. I mean, I think of something and I go right to the website, order it right then, because, you know, I know if I don't order right now, I'll forget. So I'm constantly getting, as a matter of fact, just got paper towels the other day. I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm out of paper towels. Oh, let me go. I went to Target, actually. Target brought me the paper towels. I'm like, boom, there they are. 2 days later. Okay. Have you purchased your Thanksgiving and Christmas turkey yet?
I have not, but after reading what you're about to read, maybe I should.
Same here. According to a new report, labor and supply issues are threatening holiday turkey availability. A broker for Shady Brook Farms, one of the nation's largest turkey suppliers, said in a recent letter to his retailers, customers, that it is advised its vendors in July that the industry continues to struggle with production issues. Meanwhile, the New York-based Morton Williams grocery chain was recently told by vendors that it wouldn't get its birds weighing less than 16 pounds. So, there's going to be some big birds out there and there's going to be a limited amount of them based on what's going on and how they're notifying the grocery stores now and distributors. So, folks, don't listen to me, but I'm just reading this from Business Insider. But it sounds like you might want to, if you see turkeys, you might, if you want one for Thanksgiving and Christmas, you might want to go buy one now. You're not going to get it for 29 cents a pound either. I noticed that. The price of turkeys have gone through the roof. But it's going to be
so
a shortage.
You said that you were having something sent to my house this weekend, and now I'm wondering, is it a turkey?
Well, you know, I am, and it is food, by the way, but it's not a turkey. I'll ruin the surprise. Because I didn't read this article until after I put your order in. But if I had known this, yes, I would have sent you a turkey.
I prefer the size anyway. So.
You what?
I prefer the Thanksgiving sides anyway versus the turkey.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right. Now, here's two. This is like two of my favorite stories that we're telling. All right, here we go. Starbucks baristas say they are fed up with the complex custom drink orders that converge on the ridiculous. And I have, not recently, but I have been in Starbucks, and it's intimidating, first of all, because I just want coffee. But these people, they order some of the most craziest stuff. They got like 40 different ingredients in their coffee. One of the baristas said that they were asked to blend egg bites into a drink. Insider spoke with over a dozen current and former baristas who said they're sick of all the complex orders. Baristas said many would taste disgusting, and they slow the order process down. I know it takes forever. It takes the people forever just to tell them what they want. But some of these stupid recipes that people are putting together are all based on TikTok trends, and everybody's like trying out all these new combinations. But of course, by the way, Rachel, you're in marketing, so you'll appreciate this. A Starbucks rep told Insider that most custom orders were simple and the company values customization. That's called political correctness.
Right.
Yep, I love that. They value customization. All right, then.
Yeah, they're trying to save face there.
Yes, they are. Well, it gets even better. This is my favorite story. Starbucks worker was fired after a customer says he smacked her face with a wet rag. The woman, who remains anonymous, recently told local news outlet WCAU that around 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, she asked to have her drinks made again after her order was prepared wrong, and the employee, quote-unquote, caught an attitude. She said the barista remade it and filled my cup halfway with caramel and slammed it on the counter when it was finished. After asking to speak to a manager, the customer alleged that the employee then took his wet rag, smacked me on my face with it, and he swung it at me. So we started fighting. I would have loved to have been there. I would have given anything to be there to see this. She says, I was shocked for a second. Then he swung at me, so I swung back. The now former Starbucks employee was identified as Robert Freda. I should try to see if I can get close to Robert Freda. Can you imagine how funny he would be as a guest?
Oh, gosh.
The employee, Robert Freda, who told WCAU that he acted in self-defense and that he suffered a black eye, contusions, and marks on my body. He said, if anybody was left with more damage, it was me. All right, here we go. Now, you ready for the Starbucks marketing spokesperson? This I love. Here we go. The Starbucks spokesperson told People magazine Wednesday an investigation found that the employee to be at fault. Spokesperson Reggie Borges said the cafe is, quote, a place where everyone should feel welcome. I would have given anything to be there. And I'm surprised no one actually I haven't seen that posted on TikTok or Facebook or anything. I'm surprised somebody did get that on video because everybody's got cameras now.
Right. I would have been shocked just as, like, somebody not involved in it. Like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is happening.
I think it's hilarious. Okay.
I guess that's another reason why I don't frequent Starbucks, because I don't want to get hit in the face with a wet rag.
Well, there you go. Me either. And I feel intimidated. I feel like if I don't hurry up, everybody's looking at me. I'm sweating. I don't know what to order. I just want coffee, and they got 5,000 different things that you put in your coffee. I just want, give me a coffee. But people all have their little routines, and it's like you don't know what to do. You're standing there like, can I take your order? Can I take your order? Can I take your order? What's your name? Can I take your order? All right. I had people standing behind me one time, I think it was in Atlanta, Georgia, and I couldn't decide what I wanted because I was just, you know, reading the menu board, and you could hear people in the background huffing and puffing, making comments. It's like, would this big oaf hurry up and get his coffee? Okay.
Right. Would he just go over to Dunkin' Donuts so we can get our coffee?
And they do have better coffee at Dunkin' Donuts anyway. Okay.
You can get a small, medium, or large. You don't have a venti, whole.
That's right. Yeah. And like I said, it is the best coffee. It's way better. Plus, you can get a donut there too, a better donut. They've got all those fancy pastries and muffins at Starbucks. I just like to have, give me a medium coffee and one of those chocolate donuts. Okay. Coors, you know, the Coors beer people, they're launching their own whiskey. I did not know this either. Five Trail Whiskey will use Coors malt and Rocky Mountain water as its ingredients. And basically, beer is used to distill and make whiskey for the most part anyway. But needless to say, Coors says we have plenty of beer, and we decided to make whiskey. So they're set to roll out. Excuse me, I had a hiccup. Set to start rolling out on September 1st, Five Trail Blended American Whiskey. It'll be the first product produced under the new Coors Whiskey banner and the first full-strength spirit ever from Molson Coors Beverage Company, which I didn't know this, but Coors is America's second largest brewer. So they're coming out with it. The bottle of it's going to cost $59.99. It'll be 42.5%. alcohol by volume, and now they're entering the premium, ultra premium whiskey category. Okay, moving along.
Do you know what the first largest brewery is? It Anheuser-Busch?
I'm thinking it probably still is Anheuser-Busch. You know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Boston Beer is up there, maybe third or fourth, I believe. But I think Anheuser-Busch is still the biggest. Not sure of that, but I believe they are. Okay, speaking of coffee a minute ago, and actually Carrie and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I said it kiddingly. We were talking about plant-based foods, and she likes coffee, and I said, if someone came out with a fake coffee, would you drink it, and plant-based? And she said, well, coffee is plant-based. It's made from a coffee bean, from a coffee tree, and I said, true. But what if someone came out with a mushroom coffee? Would you drink it? Well, it turns out, so I'm looking online just for the fun of it. There already is a mushroom coffee. It's called mudwater.com, M-U-D-W-T-R.com. Mudwater is a coffee alternative consisting of organic ingredients lauded by cultures old and young for their health and performance benefits. It has 1/7 the caffeine of coffee. Mud gives you natural energy, focus, and more without the jitters and the crash. But it's made out of mushrooms. And I was kidding. I thought I was joking. I thought, there's nobody going to make coffee out of mushrooms. Well, yes, they are. So if you're looking for a coffee alternative, I wonder if Starbucks has that. I wonder if anybody will fight over it. I don't know. This is a story you sent me, Rachel. Pizza vending machines, pizza making robots, and other cool pizza inventions. So, pizza is probably known by most people, and then it does come from Italy. I was wondering if it did actually come from Italy in reading this article. Flatbreads with toppings, however, have been consumed by ancient civilizations such as the Greek and the Egyptians, according to an article by History. Naples, however, is considered the modern birthplace of pizza. The early pizzas in Naples, which were usually sold along the streets, had toppings much like the ones seen in pizzas today, including garlic, tomatoes, and cheese. All right, so that's a little history lesson. Well, early this year, a pizza-making robot made by a company called Picnic caught people's attention when it sold over 500 pizzas with less than 1% recorded food waste. Back in April, popular pizza chain Domino's rolled out its pizza delivery robot that can self-drive. So, you know where this is headed, don't you? Okay, if you're paying people $15, $20 an hour and they don't show up to work and they don't do their job, everything's going to be replaced by these type of machines. They can make 500 pizzas with less than 1% recorded food waste. And, of course, the pizza delivery robots means we don't need that kid delivering the pizzas anymore. And then the big one was the pizza vending machine. I guess they're trying these out in Rome. And it's made by a guy named Massimo Bucolo, who installed the city's first pizza vending machine. According to the report by the New York Times, the pizza vending machine makes a fresh pizza from scratch in exactly 3 minutes. So
now I want to go see that.
So do I. It actually sounds kind of interesting.
And this story makes me hungry for a slice of pizza for sure.
I've got some in the freezer. I always have pizza in the freezer because you do. You'll have those cravings at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night for something. The best thing to do, 13 minutes later, you throw it in the oven and you got yourself a pizza. Now, this story, I think you sent this to me too about KFC. Did you send me this about the hotel?
I did.
Oh, this is crazy. And I'm trying to figure this out. All right, KFC is opening. Matter of fact, it's opening this week. And it's opening over in the United Kingdom. And I can't, for the life of me, I can't understand why over there. But anyway, KFC is opening a pop-up hotel where guests have their own press for chicken button and can get $139 of free food a night. The actual cost of staying at this pop-up hotel is $154. This is a great deal, by the way. So you pay $154.
It really is, and are you sure this radio show isn't, you're not actually in London there right now at the KFC hotel?
I wish I was, because you could just press the button, and they'll bring you up to, can you imagine, I mean, $139 worth of chicken. That's a lot of chicken. So, I mean, you just press the button, they keep bringing you chicken until you get to $139. It only costs you $154 to stay there. So do the math. It costs, if you eat $139 worth of chicken, it only costs you $15 to stay there.
Right. I love how it said KS told Insider in an email the reason it was $139 during the stay is to prevent overconsumption. And I thought $139 isn't an overconsumption of chicken? That's a whole lot of chicken.
I mean, if you had 10 or 12 people staying in your room, but I think they even said that. They only allowed, I think it was up to 6 people in a room. Well, 6 people and $139 of chicken is still a lot of chicken.
Although I guess, like you said, all the prices are going up, so maybe it's only like, you know, a drumstick and a wing or something.
Well, maybe. That's true. Maybe $139 doesn't go as far as we think it does, especially over in London. The fast food chain said in a press release Wednesday that its House of Harlan, that's what the hotel's called, House of Harlan, which Harlan, Colonel Harlan Sanders was the man's name who started KFC, would open in London for 11 nights between August 18th and August 29th, which is funny, too. They said the 11 night, why they choose 11 nights, it references the 11 herbs and spices that go into the Kentucky Fried or KFC chicken. A black
Which you
Cadillac,
know that I love that they did the 11 nights because just like on their Twitter handle, they only follow 11 people. Did you know this story?
Oh, no, I did not know that story.
So they follow the five Spice Girls, the old, you know, the Spice Girls band.
Right.
So the official KFC Twitter follows the five Spice Girls and then six guys named Herb. So then that's 11 spices and herbs.
Oh, very interesting. I did not know that. 11 herbs and spices. Now that was, why didn't you send me that story?
Well, that's just something I knew from a couple years ago that, like, somebody cracked the code as to why KFC only followed 11 people.
Very, very interesting. Well, if you go there, a black Cadillac, which KFC calls the Colonelmobile, will pick up guests and take them to the pop-up hotel where their own check-in clerk, not check-in, check-in clerk, will greet them, the company said. Guests will have access to a private cinema, a hot winger arcade machine, and a chicken concierge service. All they have to do is just push the button for press for chicken and wait for free chicken to be delivered to their room. I hope they do it here because you know I'm going.
Right. I want to hear about people's experience there.
Yeah, me too. So I think, well, the 18th from the 29th, so people are just starting to go there. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of response. I mean, it only had a few rooms. It didn't have a whole lot of rooms either. So it's going to be a limited amount of people. But I'd love to know why they chose London. There's got to be a reason for that. It didn't say in the article why they chose London. You would think they would do that, like, here, because I think Colonel Sanders was in Kentucky, I believe. I'm not sure. I believe it's where he started the restaurant. So why they chose London, I have no idea, other than maybe KFC is really big over in London.
Well,
okay.
I would think it was from Kentucky. Isn't that what the K in KFC stands for?
Yeah, Kentucky Fried Chicken. You're right. Thank you. Boy. It's been a long night. I forgot that. Yeah, it used to be called Kentucky Fried Chicken. KFC, there you go. But why would they choose London? That's something I would like. I'm going to have to write them and find out why they chose London. All right, let's see here. Those are two boring stories. We only got 6 minutes, so I'm going to do this one, the last story of the evening. A Texas man won $5.5 million lawsuit claiming a restaurant overserved him alcohol. Daniel Rawls from Andrews, Texas, has won an alcohol-related lawsuit against La Fogata Mexican Grill on claims that over-drinking caused an altercation with another customer. Andrews County 109th District Court awarded Rawls $5.5 million in a hearing on July 27. In an incident, this is kind of like the Starbucks story, in an incident which took place in May of 2019, Rawls alleges that the bar's negligence in over-serving him alcohol later caused him to be injured in an altercation with another customer. The lawsuit was made up of five claims, including premises liability and negligence and damages arising for unforeseeable criminal conduct. Skip that part. La Fogata owner and an unnamed bartender are cited in the lawsuit as responsible for the injury, having overserved alcohol to both men, which allowed them to leave the bar together. So they got in a big fight because they've been drinking too much. But here's the kicker in the story. Andrews County 109th District Court ruled in favor of Rawls in a default judgment after the restaurant owner failed to respond to the suit or attend the hearing. So the owner didn't even show up to the court hearing. So the judge ruled in the drunk man's favor. the court did not rule on whether or not the claims were true. Just because the owner of the restaurant didn't show up, the judge says, okay, fine, $5.5 million.
Wow.
Ross allegedly has a history of excessive drinking, according to the Houston Chronicle. Local jail records show he was arrested in February 2019 and May of 2021 on charges of public intoxication. The appellate court does say that the restaurant has 30 days to appeal the ruling if they intend to seek a new trial. So they can go back and seek a new trial, but they didn't show up. So the judge gave the drunk man $5.5 million. Wow.
Well, I love how it's somebody else's fault for, like, he's an adult. He should be able to know when to maybe stop.
Yeah, I know bars got to be real careful about over-serving. If somebody leaves a bar and has drank too much and goes out and gets in a car and has an accident, that the bar can be held liable. So that's not unusual, and it's up to the bartender to cut people off when they've had too much to drink. So, yeah, that's a weird part of the law. But when people get so drunk they can't make decisions for themselves, it's up to the bar or the restaurant to make that decision. And there you go. We ran through all of our news stories for the evening. Rachel, you did fantastic as a co-host. Thank you for filling in.
Oh, thanks. I guess I learned from the best.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the best, but you did learn something. But no, thank you. You did a great job, and thank you for all the great food news stories that you send each week. And stand by. You never know when I might need a co-host. All right, everybody, we appreciate you joining us on the show. If you need more information or want more information, go to greenideasradio.com. Once again, we'd like to thank our guest, Chef Jesse Jones. Check out his website and go to his Facebook page, order his cookbook. And Rachel, anything else you want to add? I know you're going to probably run out to IHOP after you get off the show. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I was thinking about going to pop a pizza in or get some KFC.
There you go. All right, we're going to go, folks. Thanks for joining us. Come back again next Saturday, and we will have some more food guests and some more food news and keep you abreast of what's going on in the food industry, keeping abreast for you. That's related to the chicken story. All right, everybody, take care. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Grilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie. Opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts and guests of this program are not necessarily shared by this station and are purely for entertainment purposes. Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at GrilliantIdeasRadio.com.